Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
New York sports is more than a game. It's a lifestyle. WFAN is the only place where Yankees, Mets, Giants, and Jets fans come together and sound off. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always streaming on the Odyssey, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn apps.
Oh, yeah. 304, McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Me and Marco having the Robert Redford conversation again. It is amazing. We just love, as a people, we just love talking movies. Like, oh yeah, Robert Redford. And they're like, you gotta see this one. And again, for Saturdays, I think I'm gonna start doing a Saturday matinee. And talking about movies. I'll try and watch a movie a week. And then talk a little bit about movies on a Saturday. We got time. And I love talking movies. 888-808-1019. Let's talk a little bit about rotations in general, but obviously with the Yankees rotation, because it was a conversation I heard on the Afternoon Drive show today. And I feel pretty strongly about it. And I've brought it up and talked about it on the air. And I know me and Fleegs had a long conversation about it too. When you're in a three-game wild card series, I think you have to treat the wild card series different in a three-game series. I don't think it's just the standard, well, I'll throw my best in game one, I'll throw my second best in game two, I'll throw my third best in game three. Like, I don't think it's just that standard type of thinking. Now, I heard Evan today, and let's get specific with the Yankees, because I don't know if the Mets have the ability or really the clear-cut second pitcher that you feel better about. So their situation might be a bit different. But whatever you deem to be your second best option. Now, again, Evan was talking about the Yankees and said he would hold Max Fried out of game one. I don't know about that. And I heard Yankee fans who are just, you know, self-loathing Yankee fans, and I know they haven't necessarily hit Garrett Crochet in the times they faced him this year. Nobody has. He's one of the better pitchers in Major League Baseball, and that's why I always laugh when people say they don't hit good pitching. Well, nobody does. That's how we know it's good. If everybody hit them, it wouldn't be good pitching. That's how we distinguish good from bad. They're hitless. But I'm not hiding or ducking from Garrett Crochet or not conceding losses if it's the Boston Red Sox in game one if Crochet is pitching. That's nonsense. So I still think for game one, I would throw Max Fried. But I honestly don't think I'd be opposed to the idea of throwing Carlos Rodon game one. But whoever you throw game one for the New York Yankees, there are two starting pitchers who obviously are their two best. Max Fried, Carlos Rodon. Whichever one I choose to pitch in game one, if the Yankees win game one, I am without question, I'm not even thinking about it, it is absolutely the strategy to go with. If the Yankees win game one, I am saving that second pitcher, whether it's Rodon or Fried, and I am saving them for if I need them in game three, or hoping I can win game two with my third starter and save them for game one of the ALDS. It's not even a thought for me. The idea that if they win game one, like say the Yankees make the decision that Luis Gil's the third starter, and let's just say it's the Boston Red Sox. If Max Fried beats the Red Sox and the Yankees win the first game of the series, I am throwing Luis Gil in game two, and I am saving Carlos Rodon. There's not even a thought in my mind. And if they did it the other way and threw Carlos Rodon, I am saving Max Fried. If they win game one, I am going with my third starter in game number two and saving the other top starter I have for either the elimination game, game seven-ish, game three of that series, or hopefully I win game two and I've set myself up better in the ALDS to have either Max Fried or Carlos Rodon have the ability to start twice in that series by giving him game one. It's not even a thought. The idea that, no, I pitch my second best in the second game and I go for the win right then and there. I put my foot, as to quote Jazz Chisholm, I put my foot on the throat. I'm not messing around. I'm going to win game two. I'm throwing my second best pitcher. I think that's idiotic. I don't think that makes sense at all. I'm going to pitch that guy anyway. If I lose game one, then certainly. I got to win game two, so I'm pitching my best. But if I win game one, I am saving my other top starter. I am throwing Luis Gil or Cam Schlittler, whoever they choose, in game two. That's not giving up. That's not saying I can't. I'm going to need them to pitch well and win games in the postseason if I'm going to win the World Series anyway. I'm pitching them in game two, hoping I win the series there, and now I'm set up with Rodon to start game one of the next series and game five of the next series if I need him. I got him twice, as opposed to throwing my fourth starter in game one of an ALDS and putting myself behind the ball, the eight ball. There is no question in my mind. And then if you lose game two, obviously you have him there for the elimination game of game three. And if you lose game one, you desperately need to win both of those games, then I throw him game number two. But there is no doubt. I heard callers call up. I heard pushback from Tiki and Marash. Now, I don't know if I save Max Fried. I still want to throw my best in game one and try and get the advantage of taking the lead in the series. His thought was to start Carlos Rodon and save Max Fried. I don't know about that. I'd consider it. I'd listen to it. I'm not sold on that. I still want to put my best foot forward and try and win game one and take the commanding 1-0 lead in a 3-game series. I still think I'd want to do that. But I feel pretty good about Carlos Rodon. I know many Yankee fans won't until he does it. He's had one hell of a year. His body language, everything about him has been completely different this year. A couple of big games he's blown up, no doubt. There has been the occasional, what we would call a big game. The Boston Red Sox lit him up one day. Like, there's been a couple you could point to and say, hey, that was a big game and he spit the bit. Maybe. But it's few and far between. And as far as the other main concern of allowing innings to spitball, one bad thing, one error, one bloop single, one bad break, one ball off a bag that couldn't be fielded. Like, anything like that happens and Carlos Rodon loses it and the inning becomes a 5-6 run inning, that's been almost eradicated completely. Yeah, there's been a couple of games he's shown up and not had his stuff and gotten hit around, yes. But I can't think of almost any time where he's been pitching fairly well, one thing goes wrong, and then suddenly it just completely loses it, which we have seen time and time again in his previous years as a Yankee. I feel like that part of his game, the toughness in game, the ability to put things behind him and still pitch well, I feel like that's been absolutely fine. I have no worries if something goes wrong in an inning that Rodon's going to lose it. I have no worries. Is there a chance he shows up and isn't good? Of course.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
But if he's pitching well, I'm not worried about one thing changing that. He's been much better, much different a pitcher. I trust him. As much as you can trust a starter, because we all know what could happen. But I don't think there's any doubt. The strategy of saving one of your better pitchers if you win game one is absolutely 100% the way to go. I don't know how you could think differently. I really don't. So if I'm the New York Yankees and I decide Luis Gil is my third starter for this series, if Max Fried wins game one, Luis Gil's pitching game two, and I'm saving Carlos Rodon, I don't think there's any doubt. I don't think there's any doubt. And as far as the Mets go, I would do the same thing. I just don't know what they deem to be their second best option. I would imagine that it's going to be the piggyback situation of Clay Holmes and Sean Manaea. Because right now, if I had to make a decision on what the three-man rotation is for a wild card series, it's McClain, the piggyback, and Sproat. That's the three-man rotation for the New York Mets. And I can tell you this. If they win game one with McClain on the mound, I'm pitching Sproat in game number two and saving the piggyback for game number three. And if... Yeah, and then hope you win game two and then set yourself up better for the second round. Because, Yankee fans, I understand you got to win the first round to get to the second round, but it's also about winning the World Series. It's about winning the World Series. And you got to get through multiple series. And I want to set myself up best for the ALDS. It's not like you're pitching that guy anyway. Carlos Rodon's going to pitch in the series if you need him. If there is a game where they lose or go home, he's going to pitch it. But if I can find a way to avoid that, maybe win the first two without using him and set myself up for the DS, you have to take that chance. Have to. So, I mean, I was listening to it today, and the amount of pushback Evan was getting. Now, whether or not you should skip Max Fried, I get that part. That's an interesting one. I have to really think about that and have a conversation with Evan on why he believes that skipping Max Fried is the right thing to do and throwing Carlos Rodon in game one. I don't know about that. I still want to try and win game one and give myself the best chance to win game one, and that's Max Fried. But there is no doubt after that I'm pitching my lesser option in game two if I win game one. There is no doubt. I don't understand anyone who thinks different. 888- 808-1019, McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Let's get to the calls. Stu in Brooklyn. What's up, Stuart?
I agree with you on the rotation because you're right. You can't, if you win game one and pitch the lesser of two pitches, it gives you a better chance of progressing more into this following series because it sets you up in a better way for the following series to have a better pitcher pitching in game one of that series.
Right. And again, people make it like, I understand, you know, the idea of, well, then you give them game two and then they have momentum. I'm not giving them anything.
No, you're still pitching.
You're still pitching a pitcher you hope could win. You're still pitching. And plus now I'm avoiding pitching my lesser pitcher in a spot where it's lose or go home. I'm putting less pressure on that pitcher by pitching him up 1-0.
And the thing is, if he loses, you still have Rodon for game three.
Right.
Which is very good. And then it sets you, you have to have Max Fried in game one. You have to put the best out there to get the advantage.
I think that I do. I got to talk to
everyone. You 100% because you have to jump down to a quick lead in a series, because if you don't, the chances of losing are greater than if you do it with the.
I mean, listen, it's hard to win two in a row. I'd rather take my. I think the game one winner would have a much higher advantage. I got to look at the wild card. There's been so many sweeps since they started this new format. There's been a lot of just two-game series sweeps. So I would think that the percentage of the game one winner winning the series has got to be very high in this new playoff format. It has to be.
But, yeah, you avoid the sweep. You avoid being sweeped.
Swept. Well, if you win the game, you got to go win the game. Just every one of those teams threw their best pitcher in game one and lost, like whoever lost, like, you know. I'm just thinking it's got to be game one winner has been almost dominant in these three-game series. I can't, like, there's been so many sweeps. Last year, two
10
sweeps.
Out of 12 have been sweeps.
10 out of the 12 complete have been sweeps.
I'm not counting 2020 when they did it in the COVID year.
Right.
3 years.
No, correct.
2022 through last year, 10 out of the 12 series have been sweeps.
Unbelievable. Do you know?
And both of them that went three were the Mets.
Both of them that went three were the Mets.
Mets and Padres, and then Mets and Brewers. Every other wild card has been a sweep.
And the game one winner won both series.
Correct, yeah.
So 12 of 12 of game one winners win the series. 12 of 12.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. We have not seen it yet in this new. This is the fourth year. We've had 3 years of the wild card. 3 years of this new three-game format. And 12 of 12, you win game one, you win the series. Now, the Mets were right there. They were two outs away from that not being the case, but they won. And 10 of them are sweeps, which is crazy. I mean, so the 10 out of 12 being sweeps almost kind of makes the 12 out of 12 game one winners kind of almost secondary because it was just sweeps. But, yeah, winning game one has proven to be a very important, like, 12 of 12. We are yet to see a wild card series where the loser of game one went on to win the series. So game one's too important to not put my best pitcher on the mound. I think we found it. I think we found the argument for Evan. Evan was like, give me one good argument why we shouldn't start Max Fried. I think that's it. In this new format, 12 of 12, every single series played in this new format, the game one winner wins the series. I have to put out my best player, my best pitcher to try and win game one. Just have to. I can't not put my best foot forward saying, well, I'm going to pitch them anyway. Like, I get his thought process. Max Fried's going to pitch in the series. It's not like you're going to avoid him. Whatever you do with game one, Max Fried's pitching. Or if you don't need him, you got him for game one. So, like, I get the thought process. But game one has just proven to be too important to mess around with. I got to give my best chance to win game one, and that's Max Fried. Joe in Cranford. What's up, Joe?
Hey, Mac. I like the idea of, you know, the kind of rotation you're talking about for the wild card round.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just wondering, what do you think, how would it affect your second best pitcher if you have to use them both in the first three games, but you advance? What does it cost you in the next round? Like, as far as, is it possible that you would have one less start?
It wouldn't. I don't think it would. I think he's only guaranteed one start. Now, if you play it out then into the ALCS, like, you might be right. I don't know what it would affect pitching him a day later. Now, again, these are all three played in a row. It's not like game two and then an off day and then game three where it would be a two-day difference. You're talking about a one-day difference. I don't think it would make a difference in the – in the DS. I think in the DS, he's only going to get one start no matter what. Only the game one starter would have the ability to pitch twice. So I don't think it affects the DS. Now, if you continue to play it out, is there a chance that, you know, he could have a chance to start twice in the ALCS and you've ruined that, or twice in the World Series? I don't think so, but I'd have to look into that, but I guess I understand your point. it might impact the ability to have him pitch twice in a series later on, but I don't think it will. Off the top of my head, I don't think it will.
Yeah, I like the idea of it, as long as it doesn't have too much of an impact like that down the road in the next round.
Yeah, no, with the amount of off days and stuff in the next two rounds, I don't think it makes a difference. I know it doesn't make a difference in the DS. I don't think it'll make a difference in the CS, and from that on, I really can't. I don't think you could play it out, because who knows how many games you pitch, like, or what happens. You might win the first three games of the DS and then have a long break, and you could throw any pitcher in game one or two. Like, I don't know. But I don't think that's enough of a reason to change my thought process. The idea that you could pitch, if you have to pitch him in the third game instead of the second game, you know, you're pushing him back a day, and so now you could pitch him in 5 days, and it impacts how many times he goes in the next couple series. I don't think so. I want the ability, I want the chance of having him for game one of the DS. That's what I want, because then I could pitch him twice.
And at least looking at it, so for the AL this year, because like the AL had last year, the NL gets that one extra day off, so that might change it. But for the AL, game two of the wild card series is on a Wednesday. Game two of the ALDS is on a Sunday. So even if you pitch game two of the wild card, you're not coming back until game three of the DS.
Yeah. Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Yeah, no, it's not short enough. So it's not long enough. So yeah, even if you pitch game two, you're not pitching game two of the next series. The game one starter would pitch game two.
And so this allows, if you save him, you're able to pitch, your number two starter can pitch game one and five, and your ace pitches game one or game two.
Game three.
This allows you to have your top starters for three of the five LDS games instead of only two of the five.
Right. Wait, let's go over that one more time. So I understand what you're saying. All right, so if I pitch...
So let's use the Yankees. You save Carlos Rodon, you win the wild card in two, he can pitch game one of the ALDS.
And game five.
That means he's also coming back in game five.
Right.
Whoever pitches game one is not making two LDS starts anyway.
Right.
So that's Max Fried. He's pitching whether it's, you know, game two, three, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But you're now getting three starts if you go all five in the ALDS from your top two guys compared to two.
Correct. If you don't have to pitch game three. If you win it in two and save one of your top two, you're guaranteeing your top two three starts in a five-game series. And that's what I'm looking to do. That's what I'm hoping I can do. If I can't, and it's not like I'm, by pitching him in game two, I'm not helping create that. There's only one way to create that scenario where I'm getting three starts from my top two pitchers. And I do think there's a fall off for the New York Yankees specifically from two to three. Like one and two are different. I have confidence in three and four, but one and two are different. I want Rodon and Fried to pitch three times in the DS.
And actually, because game one, the way it's spaced out, whoever pitches game one could pitch game two. That's where the extra days off come in.
Right.
Can pitch two and five. So if you go one of four, two and five, you might be able to get them for four of the starts.
Four of the starts. That's in the National League.
Or you're
with the
choosing
extra day.
Or the bullpen. You know, you have extra flexibility.
Yeah. No, I don't think there's any doubt for me. You win game one, you take your chance with your third best in game two. If you win it, you're set up for the next series. If you lose it, you have your second best pitcher in the game seven-ish game three.
You know, the other thing it does with specifically these two teams and the arms we're considering, it allows a rookie or really inexperienced pitcher to pitch game two where you're trying to eliminate the other team and not that pitcher pitching in an elimination game.
Absolutely. It avoids putting, especially, you're right, with the Yankees, it'll be a rookie or an inexperienced Luis Gil, one or the other. And for the Mets, it very well likely could be a rookie in Sproat. And then the other thing is, two different things. One, yes, you're not pitching him in a game where it's win or go home. It's not an elimination game. You're avoiding the elimination game if you can. And then two, it also sets you up where you feel good about not having to use too much of your pen in game one, and you think like you'd be able to not use, you'll be a lot more aggressive with your bullpen in a game two with a young kid. You know you can go to him. Hopefully, if you won game one, it probably means your pitcher pitched well in game one, so you probably didn't use a lot of your pen in game number one, and you're banking on your second best pitcher in game number three. You could be uber aggressive with your bullpen in game number two.
Right, that works for both teams. Because with the Yankees, you'd feel confident that you can get six or seven out of Rodon.
Yes.
And with the Mets, if it's the piggyback, well, you know each of those guys can go 4-5.
You know it's exactly right. Yep. Exactly right. So you could not only
And this in the wild card series, it's the only time in the playoffs where you're getting those three consecutive games. Yep. So, yeah, the big relievers, they're probably not going to pitch every game.
Right. And not that you can't pitch them every game. It's just that, I mean, because you can. Now it's win or go home. You got to be able to throw in all three games. They just don't do it all year. So I don't have faith that they'll be overly good at it in that third day in a row because they don't do it all year. It's not that there'll be some rules that the manager won't go to them like it's July or August. It's just that they haven't been asked to go 3 days in a row. I don't know how their body will respond or how well they'll pitch. So for the Mets and Yankees, it specifically makes a ton of sense because if you win game one, you probably didn't use a lot of relievers in game one, and you're set up. The Mets would have a piggyback situation in game number three, so you know you don't need to use your bullpen, and you'd have Carlos Rodon, who goes 6-7 almost exclusively. Like the dude's constantly pitching in the sixth inning. You can be uber aggressive with your bullpen in game number two. I don't think there's any doubt. You'd have to really make a very strong argument for me not to save that pitcher off again.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Game one.
Put WFAN in your contact list. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Count on Sundays all season long with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus.
All right. 3:33. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. 888-808-1019. Try that one more time. You know the number, but it's 888-808-1019. You can also hit me up on Twitter at CMACWFAN. And on the live chat. What's up? What's up, chat people? Today's been kind. No fat jokes, nothing about my facial hair. It's been great. Except that then it gets hijacked by like two people having a conversation. Then all of the chat is just like two people going back and forth about stuff. But I love you guys. Thank you for watching. You can obviously consume the show on YouTube. You could stream it live. You can go to the Odyssey.com app, obviously, and listen to it live. You can go on YouTube now and stream it live and watch me in live Technicolor right here on The Fan at 3:34 in the morning. What else are you doing? If you're up listening to me right now, what else are you doing? Might as well pull me up on YouTube. 888-808-1019. Let's get back to the calls. Paul in Buffalo. What's up, Paul?
Chris, how about our outfielders? Yes. Bellinger and Grisham. Every single game, you end the game and you say, my God, what was it like seeing Verdugo out there butcher balls? Like you were talking about him. You know, one of the reasons Clay Holmes isn't here is because...
I mean, he fell down once.
It's just the worst time. So. And of course, his personality. I mean, maybe the players like him, but as a fan, I couldn't stand that guy. He's just one of those guys you want to punch in the face. I'm sorry.
I hear you. Well, when you hit 200, it kind of gets that way. I mean, I mean, if he was hitting 350, I promise you wouldn't felt that way.
Well, that's a fact. I mean, I don't know why. I love Jazz Chisholm, and normally he might be a guy that rubs me the wrong way, but Jazz is all right with me.
He's one home run away from having a 30-30 season. That's
Bellinger is three RBI away from it.
He's Bellinger's one RBI away from... He's pretty much going to have a 30-100 season, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's incredible. You can almost, now Soto's having a better year, but you can almost go one for one Soto and Bellinger. He isn't that much better this year.
He's better this year.
Bellinger's
probably, if you look at his clutch numbers and his numbers with runners scoring position, Bellinger's probably been a little bit better. But
think
outside of that,
what Bellinger and Grisham do for this team, considering Judge can't throw right now,
100%, 100%. And hopefully we'll see what happens with Judge. But yeah. Look, if you're, we went back and forth about this, Paul, a lot. I don't know how the future of the organization is going to play out. I still think signing Juan Soto would impact this team long term, but there is no doubt with the emergence of Grisham and the way Bellinger has played, and really the emergence of Ben Rice as well. This Yankee team and how well Max Fried has pitched and everything, like. They are better off that they did not sign Juan Soto.
I mean, there's no doubt. Take a lot of bows if they make a deep playoff.
There's no doubt, and that's just for this year. I want to make it clear. I still would have, if I could go back in time, I would still sign him because I think long term, you want that superstar player, and Juan Soto is a superstar player. But
well,
in the short term,
they've got to develop to replace him. But yeah, short term, we're better off.
Short term, they're better off. It's hard to argue. I mean, you're right. I mean. Grisham's been incredible. He's got 32 home runs. It's out of control. And I know Judge can't throw. We're going to find out if he can push it a little bit moving forward. But defensively, give me another outfield that's as good as Grisham, Bellinger, and Judge out in the outfield. Now,
only the Padres.
Yeah.
Their center fielder, he took a hit, what is it, from Mimmo last night?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, out in the center. I thought it was a double, and this kid just tracks it down like he's walking on clouds.
Yeah, Liriano, they're pretty good. The Cubs have a good defensive outfield as well.
Talking the best in the league.
When Tucker's healthy. But, I mean, Judge and Grisham and Bellinger, and that's the thing about Bellinger. He could play left, he could play center, he could play right, he could play first base. He gives you really good
bats.
That at-bat against Chapman, and we talk about you wanted to compare him. I'll be honest with you. The at-bat against Chapman in Fenway to put that ball off the wall and score that extra run, that's my favorite at-bat from a Yankee since Juan Soto sent them to the World Series. Like that was an incredible at-bat. And off a pitcher
really
right now who doesn't give up hits, I think he went like 30 straight innings or appearances without giving up a hit.
Oh, he got himself a second contract.
Yeah, he's already signed another contract. He's getting, John Boy and in trouble for believing stories about that he never tried to locate fastballs before and everything. Like, Chapman's having an incredible year, and to have that at-bat and put one off the wall to score that extra run, that's as good an at-bat that I've seen from a Yankee since Juan Soto's memorable home run.
And Chris, I was with you to the point where I thought Heel was the third starter. You had convinced me there. Now, I don't know, him and Schlittler, it's going to kind of flip a coin, I guess, whoever's pitching better going right to the moment.
Yeah, I mean, listen, that's the question mark of this team right now. Or at least when I say question mark, I don't mean what will possibly hold them back. The biggest question mark on if they can win the World Series is the bullpen. But the bullpen is the bullpen. There's no decisions to make. The biggest question mark on what the Yankees will do is, well, I guess there's two, really. And last night was actually an interesting look into what they're going to do. But to me, it's either who's going to start game three or who's going to be the starting shortstop. I was surprised Caballero played last night. I got to be honest with you. I was surprised. I thought for sure, coming off two hits and a walk, and making I think he had two plays. One was virtually, as rote as you can have. And then one, he made a decent play to his left. It wasn't superb, but it was decent enough. But he played shortstop clean, two hits and a walk, a two-out single with a runner on second going the other way. I thought for sure Anthony Volpe would play yesterday. And to go back to Caballero, I think is telling. Now, I understand they think Caballero's earned it, and he absolutely has. Boone also said they're going to face two left-handers against Baltimore, and that Volpe's going to play against left-handed pitching. So he knew he was going to play Volpe a couple times the next couple days, so he wanted to get Caballero in there. I mean, I'm curious to see what happens here. Those are the two things in flux. Who is the starting shortstop come postseason time, and who is the third starter? Steve in Rockland. What's up, Steve?
You know, Chris, you made a great point about Verdugo. Everyone would have loved him if he was going to be hitting 350.
Yeah, I mean, attitude and character and all the stuff that we don't like this player, it's because he doesn't perform. We would like everyone if they performed. I mean, that's just the bottom line.
But, Chris, here's something about Bellinger that I'd love to point out that I was able to pin down. You know, Bellinger has an outfield assist from center, left, and right this season.
Yeah.
I do not know how many other players in Major League Baseball history. See, that's got to be some kind of statistical oddity that doesn't occur all the time. All right. And this is what I'm getting. And look at Grisham. The Yankees are going to have to find a way.
I don't know.
To sign the boat. I just don't see how they can let either one of them walk. And what I'm worried about is that the Mets this past year, in fact, the last couple of years, they have their big free agent signing. They got a guy they give a lot of money to. And then they just kind of fill in the blanks with less, you know, with fewer resources. And I got a feeling they're going to change that up this offseason just because of the way things have gone. You know, I got to believe that Steve Cohen is going to step in and say, listen, you know, I'm going to give you permission to go spend a couple of extra dollars on a starting pitcher. I do not know which one it could be.
I don't know if there are any, to be totally honest with you. I don't think the crop of starting rotation free agents are that good. And, you know, Fleegs gets mad whenever I say this, but I don't know how much they're interested. Now, for the right, I mean, they're just dead set against signing any kind of ace or starter in free agency, period, at the age of 30? Maybe not. Maybe there's the right guy, and you could make a case that the right guy hasn't been presented, and the one guy who did was Yamamoto. He was 26, which is a unique situation for a free agent, but they offered him over $300 million. So they're open to paying starting pitching. It's got to be the right starting pitching. I just think it's very hard. The Yamamotos don't come around very often at 26. But I don't think there was anybody last year, and I think this is fair. We could scream and huff and puff, and I did at the beginning of the year, that they didn't invest enough into the rotation, and they were going in with the same kind of this idea that they can just fix everybody, and I hated it. But if you look at how this season has gone, there is not a single starter they could have signed in the offseason that would have impacted them in a major way. Like, there just wasn't. Corbin Burns has gone. Imagine if they signed Corbin Burns to that contract and he had Tommy John. Like, let's just be fair. We got to be fair. And next year's starting rotation free agents don't look that good either. So I do not expect the Mets to go out there and spend money in free agency. But your point about Trent Grisham, here's my thing. And I hate to say this, because I love the dude. Love the dude. During the trade deadline, when there was rumors they could trade him, I went on a campaign, do not trade Trent. I was like, don't trade Trent. Over and over again, I said it a million times, tweeted it a bunch, do not trade Trent. And it's not just that Dominguez is waiting in the wings and eventually he deserves a legitimate shot. Came up, he's starting like once every 7 or 8 games. I know he had a tooth infection that we just found out about last night. That's part of the reason he hasn't played that much. He comes through with a big hit, steals a base, steals third, almost, you know, leads to a run. I've loved the way the Yankees have played too on the bases. I know they've gotten thrown out a couple of times. I get it. And they're second in Major League Baseball, getting thrown out at third. I want to be aggressive. They have the ability to do it. They have the players to do it. Go be aggressive and steal bases. I love it. I love it. I hate when teams do it to the Yankees, so go do it to other teams. And Dominguez is part of that. And it's not just that you want to have Dominguez and get a legitimate chance. It's not that you have Spencer Jones, who you chose not to trade, who's waiting in the wings. He's got 32 home runs. And he plays a gold glove caliber center field. There are some people, some metrics that he has lost the step from his gold glove days, but still, I feel pretty comfortable with him out in center field. I don't know the number he's going to get. He could get a big number. And let's be honest, I love him. He's having a great year. He's never been anything like this. do you really want to give $100 million and a multi, like, he might get 100. I don't know what he's going to get. That's probably a bit much, but he's going to get significant money and significant time. Do you really want to invest that into a guy who's never done this before? Are we just going to assume Trent Grisham is this for the next 5 years? I don't know. I feel pretty confident that this is pretty much the Bellinger we're going to get. Maybe a little bit worse some years, maybe a little bit better some years. I don't know. Maybe, hopefully, that'd be nice. But, like, I think what we're seeing from Bellinger, you can kind of bank on. Smart player, good player, close to 30 home runs, close to 100 RBIs, plays multiple positions, will come through with good at-bats, good two-strike approach, just Yankee. I feel like I feel pretty good about Bellinger being that guy for the next 5-6 years. I don't know what Trent Grisham's going to be. We've seen guys come up and have 1 year, you know, this one pop-up year where they're great, and then you go right back into the what you've been. And not that he didn't even get a chance to be this guy last year. I get it. Maybe he is this guy. And if he is, we're going to kick ourselves for not signing him. I can't imagine the Yankees are going to sign both of them. I just can't imagine that. And if they're going to pick one, I think it has to be Bellinger. So I'd be surprised if Trent Grisham's on the team next year. I'd really be surprised. You want to give this guy a long-term contract and big money and assume we're going to get this every year when he's never done this before? I don't know. I love him. Love him. And I think he's going to play a big role for the Yankees into the postseason, obviously. I think he's having one of those magical years, and I don't think it's coming to an end. But moving forward, you want to give him 4 or 5 years and assume this is what you're going to get? Because he might get that offer this year. That's how good this year has been. Travis in the Bronx. What's up, Travis?
Chris, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Thank you. You know, it's funny. I think Grisham is the Yankees equivalent to Josh Hart, where he's having a great season. It's undeniable what he does for the team. His value to the team is greater than his individual. You know, if you look at him, if you ask someone Trent Grisham, it's like, who or what? But the reality is, I don't think the Yankees can sign him because he's going to be stuck on this season, and he's going to be compared to this season for the next 4 or 5 years if they sign him to a five-year contract. And it's going to be very difficult for him to live up to a career year. You know, the Yankees are they're at a point right now where they need to decide what they want to do with Dominguez. I think he has to play every day or he has to be traded, because if they have another season like this with him, he will lose all of his trade value. They have to figure out what they want to do with Spencer Jones. You know, I do think the Yankees are going to spend. I think they want the Japanese first baseman Murakami.
I don't know. I got to be honest with you. I thought so too, and I don't doubt that they think he's a good player. They're going to turn around Ben Rice? They're going to ignore Ben Rice in this season and not attempt to give him first base next year and save all that money and be able to put it elsewhere? I don't know. I think Ben Rice's emergence has kind of put a little bit of a wrench in the idea of going to sign Murakami. I just think it is. I don't know. The dude's got an over 800 on base percentage, you're going to go pay $1 million for a guy who's never played in the major leagues when this guy's having this kind of season, and you have him for cheap for the next couple of years? I don't know.
But if they, what are they going to value? Because I think they would carry Murakami, they would keep Ben Rice, and they would create this platoon, which essentially they have now.
I don't know, Travis. Do you know the money Murakami's going to get? You can't pay that kind of money and then platoon him with Ben Rice. And Ben Rice is a left-handed hitter. You're going to platoon him against right-handed pitching, which is, 75% of the time? I think Murakami's a switch hitter or a left-handed hitter, so I don't even think the platoon situation works. Bottom line, you do one of two things. If you love Murakami and want to bring him here and you sign him, then you trade Ben Rice. Or you do what I think most likely they're going to do, is assume Ben Rice's is going upwards. He's a homegrown kid. Murakami's never played a game in Major League Baseball, and not only does Ben Rice have an over 800 OPS, and you know the Yankees are into these metrics, he is quite literally the most unlucky hitter in baseball. And I know many people don't like to hear that, and who cares, and we're so focused on, you know, launch angle and exit velocity and everything, but his expected batting average in balls in play and to what it actually is the biggest gap in Major League Baseball. For how hard he hits it, his balls in play, the balls he puts in play should have a batting average higher than what it actually is. It's the biggest gap in Major League Baseball. He is the unluckiest player in all of baseball. He hits the ball harder with less results than any player in baseball, and the results are still pretty good. I have a hard time thinking Hal Steinbrenner, Brian Cashman, and the New York Yankees aren't going to say, thank you very much. I'm saving hundreds of millions of dollars. Ben Rice, we're going to work on defense the entire offseason. You are my first baseman. I would be shocked if that's not the case. Shocked. And that doesn't make it, and I'm not saying that, and that's probably the right decision. Go spend that money elsewhere. Go pick up a bunch of the best bullpen arms. Go get, you know, I think starting pitching, they'll be okay. You know, go see if you can go get a catcher. Honestly, I don't know about Wells. Like, there's money elsewhere to be spent. Go get a big time shortstop. Like, I think there's better money to be spent than on first base when I just found a young stud. And we could say whatever we want. That's what Ben Rice has been. Nelson in Rockaway. What's up, Nelson?
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it, buddy. What's up?
I just had a question and a quick statement.
Sure.
My question is, you know, I agree with the starting rotation situation that you're talking about for the wild card series.
Mm-hmm.
But what if you throw Freed game one and he loses? Do you dare go to your third best starter in the elimination game?
Nope. Well, I'm going to have to go to him in the third game. The minute I have an elimination game, I have to throw my best. So if they lose game one with Max Fried, I'm going Carlos Rodon in game two. Because I have to win that game. The minute I face a game I have to win, I have no choice. I got to pitch my best pitcher. So Carlos Rodon would pitch game two, and then I would have Luis Gil or Cam Schlittler or whoever the Yankees decide, to be the third starter. Hopefully, I'm facing the other team's third starter. We'll see how they play it. If they're smart, they'll play it like we suggest, and the second best starter will be the third best starter will be there in game two. But you know what I'm saying. But like, I have to pitch once I win. I mean, once I lose and I face a situation where it's win or go home, I have to throw my best. It's been taken out of my hands. I have to win that game, so I got to throw my best. It's if they don't need that game, how do you handle it? If they need it, they need it. Once you need it, you got to throw your best. John in Tampa, what's up, John?
Chris,
yes,
I think
sir.
It's time. I think it's time we call Mark Teixeira up in the off season and bring him in and teach Judge how to play some first base. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm not there yet. It depends on how bad the arm is. It really is. Like, if the second the season's over and the parade's over, and then Judge has Tommy John surgery, like immediately, I mean, I'm open to that idea. But unless that, and even there, I still think you could play him in the outfield. It depends on how you feel about it. I mean, you know, pitchers have Tommy John and continue to throw 90 mile an hour, 100 mile an hour fastballs. Why can't someone, just because Bryce Harper decided to become a first baseman doesn't mean everyone who has Tommy John surgery. We just had Jason Dominguez have Tommy John surgery, still out in the outfield. I think he's too young. I think that transition might eventually happen. I don't think it's next year.
Okay. All right.
Not with Ben Rice. If Ben Rice wasn't there, if he didn't exist, maybe.
Yes.
But
I need to bring Teixeira in to teach Ben Rice how to play first base. Then I'll take
that. Well, yeah, that there you go. I'm into that.
Yeah,
they need someone to come in and teach Ben Rice first. Or unless you're going to make Ben Rice your catcher and teach him how to catch.
That
if that's what they want to do, I'd be surprised they do that because it takes too much of a toll on the body and he won't be as good a hitter. So I think they'd rather play him at first.
That's true. That's true. Listen, the Blue Jays.
Yes.
Okay, living down. I live right near Dunedin. When the Blue Jays played during COVID, they played a lot of their regular season games in Dunedin.
Yes.
I took advantage of it. I went. It was awesome. I have a little bit of an affinity for them now. Okay. And they deserve your label of frauds.
Thank you.
Over the years.
You're like the first person to just say that. Like every once in a while, someone will go, they'll refer to them as the fraud Blue Jays, but I take it more of just like trying to have fun with me or whatever and like be a part of the show. You're the first person that has honestly told me you think they deserve the moniker. They do. But they deserve it.
I think this year, though,
it's
going to be different because of George Springer.
We'll see. He's
George Springer finally showing up. He finally showed up after all these years.
Yeah. Thank you for the call, John. I got a break. He's having an incredible season. He's having an incredible second half. I mean, he's going to get MVP votes. He might finish third in the MVP in the American League. That's how important he's been to that team after really a couple of lousy years with them. I mean, we all felt like George Springer was no longer a threat, really. And now this year, he's been incredible. And listen, what we have seen from the Blue Jays this year has been, I mean, they're going to win the division, first off. They have been an extremely pesky group. They have come from behind just in the last 2 weeks. They've come from behind a bunch, late in games. They have done a really nice job. They put the ball in play. We watch it. We're Yankee fans. You watch the games. They foul a million pitches off. They are tough sons of guns. They're having a great year. They are. And maybe they'll finally prove me wrong. But until they do, they haven't. And they're frauds. And they've been frauds since 2001. 21, rather. Let me see if they win a playoff game. And it feels like there's a good chance if the Yankees win the wild card series, that's what we will get. We will get Blue Jays, Yankees, and the ALDS, and the frauds will be put to the test. They better win that freaking series. Otherwise, I'm going to have to eat crow like you would not believe. It'd be another Licata Atlanta situation. Not as bad, but like it'd be, I'd never hear the end of
it. You just need to hope the Canadians don't find out about it because in Atlanta, they found out about Sal.
Yeah, exactly.
Even the players found
out. Yeah, I know. Well, he's on SMY, not winning Emmys. So, like, I'm kidding with him. I said earlier, they give me the look like, oh. I said earlier he deserved it. I'm messing with Sal. But, like, yeah. If the Blue Jays beat the Yankees, I'm never going to hear the end of it. I've been calling them frauds forever.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.